And welcome again to the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. We cover sports stories, newsmakers, and difference makers in our community and across the state of Michigan. And today we have a man who has been, over his career, a newsmaker, also remains a difference maker as well. It is Matt Elliott, 35 years, a banker, president of Bank of America, Michigan. He is a civic leader as well, chairing the Mackinac Policy Conference, the Detroit Regional Chamber, sits on numerous boards as well, is a thought leader, a business advisor, now founder and CEO of Blue Lake Ideas, and soon to be an author with a brand new book. Matt Elliott joins me today on the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. Thrilled to have you here with us today. Welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Going to talk about business, about leadership, about challenges for business leaders today. But first, let's talk a little bit about your personal story. We had a phone conversation prior to today and mentioned in terms of moving from banking to where you are today that you got burned out. And that's not unique to you, I'm sure, for people who have been leading businesses, companies for a long period of time, but it happened to you. Let's start there.
Yeah. You know what I learned? The biggest thing I learned in this process, Dave, was that while my experience was unique to me and frankly not fun, it wasn't special. In fact, it was predictable. Mm. You know, the work that I've done since, I realized that, you know, when you stack as much load as we do on top of busy people. And a lot of times we talk about executives getting burned out, but frankly, it can be parents, it can be caregivers. But after a while, when the load of life, you know, the emotional, physical, operational load stacks on top of you and you don't have time to clear it, eventually you're going to get overloaded. And that's basically what happened to me. For me, it was a lot of the work. But the backdrop was a lot of personal stuff. You know, coming out of COVID, I ended up getting long COVID myself. I followed that up with cancer, which I was successfully treated for. But, you know, anyone who's gone through a cancer journey knows that that's going to leave a mark. Yeah. And then on top of that, stacked, you know, the opportunity to lead Mackinac, which was frankly one of the podium moments of my career, while I was trying to juggle three executive roles at one of the largest financial institutions in the country. And eventually, you know, I woke up one morning and realized and thinking, I thought for sure I was having a heart attack. And, you know, that was one of those moments where you can't brush it off. I really did need to call a timeout, and so I did. And part of trying to get myself, back to level playing, on level playing, if you will, I also did a lot of research to figure out, okay, what happened here? And as I've researched it, I realized that this idea of load, this idea of accelerating change leading to load, in my view, is now the number one leadership challenge that we have to deal with in the AI era, because the world is not going to slow down. So I think the probability of more and more people landing where I landed is getting higher. And my job now, as I think about it, is to try to help people lead through that environment.
And the book is Overloaded, coming out in May. Excited for that, and we'll get more into that. But one of the taglines, I assume it's in the book, but in your presentations and other things, is you can do anything, not everything, right? Do I have it right?
You got it. You know, you can do anything, but you can't do everything. Yeah. And I think, you know, as someone who prided himself on being able to juggle a lot of plates, you know, my job as president of Bank of America, Michigan, for example, was a part-time job. You know, I led big businesses around the state, you know, billion-dollar balance sheets around the Midwest. In addition to that, and that's the way a lot of organizations and big companies work. And so you pride yourself on being able to juggle all that. But the reality of it is that at some level you do have, when you walk into the day, you have a finite amount of energy. You have a finite number of hours. And so you have to really get clear on what matters most, because you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And so that prioritization piece is where this whole chain starts. You know, this idea of I got to shed the load so I can focus on the big stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what really matters.
All right. So we're overloaded. So how do we successfully deal with being overloaded?
Yeah.
Speaking of whether it's business leaders or, as you say, parents in some cases, caregivers as well. How do we deal with overloaded?
You know, before we get into that, maybe it's worth talking about parents and caregivers.
Okay.
I talk a lot about leadership. And when I say leader, I mean it in a fairly broad sense. I mean, if someone is looking to you for an example, you're a leader. You know, and very often that will be people who, like, in your work unit are the ones that everybody goes for answers, for example. Certainly if you're a parent, you're a leader, right? And leading and winning, in my view, in these environments is when you want to win, you're trying to deliver for yourself, for the people you're leading and the people you love. That's, you know, so what I'm trying to do is help people win in that way, in that environment. So, you know, the overload element, number one, is just, first of all, this admission that the world can easily overload you, and that you have to take regular steps to shed that load. And what, with the help of some partners we've developed, is actually a process and a practice to help leaders do that. You know, it's a very simple three-part practice that layers into whatever management strategy you might have, or, you know, routine at home. But the first starts with a pause and reflect and get clear on, you know, what matters most, who matters most, and what I can actually control. Mm-hmm. And right there, you realize I'm probably worried and spending energy on things that aren't a lot of my control. Let's shed that. The next thing is what I call accessing the power of and, because ultimately what we want to get to is we want to counteract what overload does for us, which it drives us into a place where our thinking gets very binary, either or, good, bad, you know, yes, no. That's the most simplistic way to think about, you know, make decisions. And it's the natural consequence of being overloaded. But when we know that the very best leaders, the very best companies are the ones that don't just do one thing or the other, they do both. Like, let's go to sports. The best football teams don't just run the ball or pass the ball. They're able to have a balance of both, right? The best leaders that I ever worked with were the ones who could execute today and plan for tomorrow. They were the ones that balanced the people and the results. That's the power of and. They're willing to balance those tensions and not, you know, sort of collapse it down into one or the other. So you have to shed some load to be able to do that work. So step two is to name the tensions that are important to balance. I just did this with a client of mine the other day, and it was really powerful for their team to not think about it. They want to grow the company. And so they're thinking, hey, do we do sales or do we try to maximize margin? And the answer is yes. So now there's a tension we have to balance. You have this really great culture. We're going to have accountability and we're going to have empathy. How do we do that? That's a different story, right? But that's a different conversation. But now we're set up for long-term success because we're no longer bopping back and forth between good, bad, right, wrong. And then the third thing is that you need to do new things to bring that and to life, to figure out how to balance that. And the way that you do those things, those new things, is that you don't just make dramatic changes all in one go. You test and you learn, you know, and you're continually testing and learning what's working for me today. And you go back to the top, stop, pause, figure out where I am, right?
But as a leader, you're supposed to have all the answers already, right?
Yep.
You're in charge, you know, but we don't have all the answers, do we?
The way that we all, and a lot of leaders, are promoted is by being seen as those people who are leaders, people you will follow, who have an answer. And I think that increasingly more and more leaders understand the fact that if they're willing to have some humility and some vulnerability and say, I necessarily don't have the answers, but we will find them together, that you will go farther faster with that team than with the person who says, I do have all the answers, because that person tends to shut down learning. That person tends to shut down communication at the very time, especially now in the world we're living in now, when we need to open it up. The aperture needs to be wider, not narrower.
Matt Elliott is my guest on the Dave Llewellyn podcast today, former president of Bank of America, Michigan, off doing leadership things now. He's an author. One of the things, we mentioned the book, and we'll get more into that as well, but you write a newsletter as well on LinkedIn, The Capacity Advantage. And one of the things in a most recent newsletter, you mentioned that a disruption index that Alex Partners surveys 3,200 senior executives across 11 countries. And this is in line with what we were talking about, right? Yeah. 70% of CEOs report high disruption. 72% say it's increasingly difficult to know which forces to prioritize. Successful companies, fast-growing companies, they seem to get this more than others who are struggling with it, all right, as simply as we can. what's the difference there? The things that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, the difference really is this thing of having a management team that's comfortable and willing to manage paradox. It's this thing, this idea of paradox thinking. This is there's a book out there called Both And Thinking, that's a parallel to The Power of And. And the authors do a really good job of researching the kinds of leaders and the kinds of teams that do well in these sorts of environments, like the one we're living in now. And they're the ones that are able to balance the paradox of executing today and leaning into an uncertain future. Some of the habits of that are, number one, just some mental dexterity. People who are always learning and they're open. Mm-hmm. So, and I really believe, for example, that an organization can never really evolve beyond the psychology of its leader. And so if the leader is willing to be vulnerable, if the leader is always learning, if the leader is open to a degree, then the rest of the team has that same space too. But you have to have some structure, right? There's the balance, the end. That's number one. I mean, number two, they're constantly running experiments and they're constantly learning. There's an idea out there and this test and learn concept called experimental mindset that says, hey, you know, a leader is going to stand up in front of a team and maybe even his or her bosses and say, you know what, boss? I don't know the answer. That takes a lot of courage, especially in a big place. I don't know the answer, but we are going to find out, and here's how we're going to do it. Here are the experiments that we're going to run. Mm-hmm. And not only that, we're going to share the results of the experiments with our team so that when it comes time to actually implement something, they know it's a tried and tested idea. Very often, they may have been involved in the experiments, so it makes much easier to adopt a new way of doing things rather than the old way, which is sitting around and waiting for instructions from headquarters. Yeah. And then, you know, a new set of instructions lands on your lap for the new system.
Yeah.
And then what?
And we've all experienced that.
Man, and I can tell you like three or four times where these, you know, the Big Bang systems change just about shut the business that I was running down in various parts of my career over a long period of time. The test and learn methodology, the, you know, being more agile is the way to handle disruption. But also that also ultimately builds confidence in the team. So when the disruption happens, it's like, okay, cool. This is our next thing. This is what we're going to do now, you know, rather than everybody freezing and looking at the leader for the answer.
All right. So while we talk about disruption, I mean, is there a bigger disruptor today than AI and the impact on our world, let alone individual companies?
Yeah.
How are we navigating that? How are the people that you interact with, how are they navigating that? I mean, it seems like it must be a huge challenge to do right by, but also do what must be done.
I think so. And I think it's a real case study of the power of and. And I'm you know, going back to first principles here, when you're overloaded, your natural... what your mind does biologically is it drives you into a place where you want to simplify the world and make it safe. And that's an either or place. And so naturally you'll want to say to yourself, is AI good or bad? And the answer is yes. Okay. So now we're going to go back and we're going to find the and. And that requires a lot of work. But those three steps I walked you through are three that can help. What I have been finding as I go through this, and this is always going to be a work in progress, is when we go back to this idea of we can do anything but not everything, to me, it's what are the things that are important for me as a human being to do? Those are the things I'm going to grab onto. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the stuff, well, how can I, let's figure out that as my AI use case. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that make that, because what I heard something the other day that really grabbed a hold of me and made me feel a lot different about AI. AI is coming for your tasks, not necessarily your job. So if you define your job as more than just a collection of tasks, hey, my job is to move this ball forward, however it happens, mm-hmm. and I'm going to use AI as my wingman to take some of this work off my plate, that's a more effective way to think about it. But there are so many different paradigms. You know, I'm doing a lot of work with MSU right now, and I'm paying attention to how the greater higher ed community is paying attention to AI. You've got some that are telling college students, literal college students, you can't use AI. Mm-hmm. These are people who are going to graduate into the workforce really soon. That doesn't make sense, because every company I work with wants to know how they're supposed to use AI.
Yeah.
You know? So everyone's trying to approach this, I think, in a lot of ways from that binary place, but we have to start with this idea that we have to find an and here and then experiment our way to find out what's the right way.
Yeah.
And it's never going to be constant. It's always going to be evolving.
Yeah, good and bad and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got it.
Power of and. All right. You mentioned Michigan State. Let's go there for just a second. New president, Kevin Guskowitz, they have Michigan State, your alma mater. Certainly,
yeah.
There have been some rocky days for the university. You're now helping with a council,
yeah,
green and white council. Talk about that work and the difference that you hope those that you're working with,
sure,
hope to make on behalf of this very important institution in our state.
Yeah. Well, let me say a few things first about the importance of higher ed. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Kevin, then I'll get into the Green and White Council. Number one, we are in Michigan are blessed with four R1 research universities. And if you stack that cluster up against any cluster in the country, it's top five. It's really impressive, the amount of research and work and the amount of intellectual capital that's created every year. Like an example, MSU graduates more doctors than any other university in the country every year.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's one of the many facts about MSU that I didn't know either until I got going on the Green and White Council. So, and it's an incredible amount of work. And so the pressure that the universities right now are feeling on national research funding is a national security issue,
right,
and we need to restore that funding, okay? I know there are issues around it, but this is mission critical to our competitiveness as a country. Secondly, with respect to MSU and Kevin, you know, President Guskowitz is an amazing leader. You know, leadership really matters, and he has done a great job of articulating a vision that I think honors the land grant, you know, mission of MSU, but also leaning all the way into the future, right? And so, for example, what we're going to do and what he always is trying to balance are things like access and excellence. And we're doing a wonderful job of that. And with the Green and White Council, one of the things he's asked us to do, Sanjay Gupta is the former dean of the business school at Broad, and myself are the co-chairs. What he's asked us to do is really, you know, lead a council of business leaders to better connect the business community and the university with the idea of driving better outcomes for students. You know, how do we prepare our students for the jobs of the next 50 years? Think about it. The students that graduate in the next few weeks are going to retire in the year like 2075, which is kind of shocking to think
right
about. And so that's number one. Number two, we want to connect them, obviously, with Michigan-based employers where we can, and we're working hard on that. By the way, MSU's about 65% of MSU's grads do stay in state, but we'd like that number to be higher. And then thirdly, how do we bring all of MSU's resources and research to bear on the big challenges and opportunities that our corporates have here in the state, especially, and also in the innovation economy? So that's what we're doing with the Green and White Council, and we've announced three initiatives. One around helping all of our students get AI ready and really be digitally competent. The second around what we call career-connected Spartans, really helping new students and helping all students with their career journey, literally beginning at orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly, what we call Spartan Catalyst is like more deeply embedding MSU research in Michigan corporates so that they can accelerate their innovation.
To that end, the MSU commitment and investment in the city of Detroit as well and the partnerships that are happening there, it seems as though that's a perfect connector to this work that the council is engaged in.
It is. You know, where MSU has done a great job. Number one, MSU is the only school in the state that's in all 83 counties. So it really is Michigan's state university in that regard. MSC is doing a lot of work in Detroit, you know, the new Henry Ford Innovation Center. I had a hard hat tour of that a few weeks ago. That's going to be an incredible resource, not just for the city and the state, but for the world. The amount of research that will be done there is incredible. And any given day, you know, there are 10, 20, 30 different programs going on and around the Metro Detroit area that MSU is working on. And, you know, one of the things I'm working on, too, as part of the council is to put some more shape to that, being able to talk about it and hopefully attract more businesses, more alumni who want to get engaged, because this is our largest node of alumni and we want to do right by them.
All right, Detroit. Let's talk about that. You mentioned chair of the Mackinac Policy Conference, involved the Detroit Regional Chamber as part of that as well. Other civic leadership, relationships that you've had as well. Mike Duggan has left office, running for governor. Mary Sheffield is the new mayor. A lot of progress over the last 15 years or so in the city of Detroit. Many things have been transformative in the city of Detroit. Your sense today of Detroit and where it's headed?
I really feel bullish about where Detroit's headed. I feel like Mayor Duggan did a phenomenal job, and I also feel like Mayor Sheffield and the things that she wants to do are the logical evolution of the things that Mayor Duggan was working on. I know that those two coordinated quite a bit. Mm. I mean, Mayor Sheffield's her own person, and she's going to do her own thing, but I think it's going to rhyme. You know what I mean? I also feel like the work that Mike Duggan, around the state is doing could be really valuable as well. This kind of goes back to the power of and. This idea that, what Mike is focused on, and I observed this with him as mayor, and by the way, when I was president of B of A Michigan, I used to, have to go talk to him every year and basically say, okay, Mr. Mayor, here's what B of A is doing for your constituents in the city of Detroit. And it was detailed examination, mm-hmm. like, okay, exactly how many of these mortgages are yours, for example. Yeah. But what he's really focused on that I think is unique for someone in politics is that he's focused on getting it right more than he is about being right. And, from what I understand is he's been bringing that message to the rest of the state of Michigan. I think we kind of got used to that here in Southeast Michigan. As he's bringing that around the state, I think a lot of people are saying, well, this is a refreshing message. Because what, most politicians want to do is bash on the other party. They're less focused on getting things done. He is very focused on getting things done. And I think that's a good thing for us. And the reason why, and you saw this if anyone was watching the State of the Region address the other day that the Detroit Chamber put on, the reason why that's so important is because in a lot of ways, Michigan's house is on fire. Our educational attainment is dropping precipitously. Mm-hmm. We are now bottom quartile. We are 40th or lower on almost every metric, and we're not getting better. Our per capita income is lagging. On almost every major metric, we're lagging on these, I would call them lagging indicators. On some of the leading indicators, we actually have some cool things we can lean into, like our growing innovation economy, like our R1 universities, like the fact we're now beginning to build some more population growth mm-hmm. in the city in particular. Man, these are things we need to lean into, right? Because if we do that, then we can be more successful as a city and as a state. And, having been at the leadership tables of the Detroit Chamber and business leaders from Michigan for over a decade, we've been talking about these things a lot, but the trends haven't always been going our way, and we need to start making progress.
Well, and let's be honest, there's tremendous division, politically in the country. But within the state of Michigan too, and you see it, in the legislature in terms of priorities and budgeting and things of that sort. Yes, please, politicians, work together for the benefit of the citizens of the state of Michigan, because as you mentioned, we need the help.
Yeah, we do. This is about getting it right, not being right. Bob Riney is this year's Mackinac Conference chair. The power of and was the theme that we used in 2023, and it really captured a lot of people's imaginations. I was very surprised and humbled, actually, that it did. And one of the things that Bob has chosen for the theme this year is finding common ground, which I think is spot on. It's what we need to do. It's an election year. Let's try to find that. but it doesn't happen by accident. And one of the things that I'll be talking about in support of Bob's message is the idea of finding common ground starts with this notion of and. It starts with this notion that we can be Democrats and Republicans, and we can do sustainability and profitability, that we can grow the, you know, we can grow and invest. These things that a lot of times we look at as being intention or being trade-offs, in the long run, really aren't. Yeah. And if we want to be successful long-term, they have to go together. That's the key message.
Well, that's the challenge too.
Not saying this is easy.
Right. Yeah. All right. So the new book, which is out in May, Overloaded, Recapturing Leadership Capacity with the Power of And. So first time author. So excited about that. I mean, I can only imagine when the book comes to you the first time and you get to unbox it or see the finished copy, that'll be a proud moment for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll even be more gratifying if many people read the book and benefit from, you know, your experience and what's inside the pages.
That's right. It's, you know, it's an act of service, number one. I mean, to be able to say, hey, I think I have something to say, took me a long time to get comfortable with.
Right.
And because I have very high standards, I iterated on it and iterated on it. And it, you know, a year ago, I thought this book would be out in 4 or 5 months, you know, and now I need to hustle to get it out in May. Okay. But I will say that as I talk about it with people, as I road test these concepts on people, I get a lot of feedback that, hey, this is a message that matters. This is a message that makes sense. And this is a message that will be helpful. Because the idea is, again, I think the number one leadership challenge we have is capacity, because of the world we live in, because of the AI era that we're living in. And if we can preserve and protect our capacity to find the power of and, then we can deliver for ourselves, for the people we lead and the people we love. And that's really what it's all about, you know? And so I'm hopeful that the book is just one tool that people can use to be successful in this AI era, and I'm really proud to be able to bring that out and talk about it.
And this next chapter for you, after 35 years as a banker, Blue Lake Ideas, you're able to touch a lot of different aspects of leadership and business, who you engage with. That has to be very exciting and gratifying for you as well. You can make an impact.
It is, you know, and I think we all think about that. As we get later in our careers, hey, I've learned a lot. I think I have a lot more to give. What's the best way for me to do that in a way that's sustainable and works for me? And, you know, so far this is the way we're going about it. And, you know, I'm going to test and learn through this just like everything else. But it's been a lot of fun so far.
Well, it's been great having you here today. Thank you for the time and for the conversation. Best of luck with the book and all of the other work that you're involved with. It's beneficial. We're all benefiting from it, so I thank you for
Great.
That as well. Great to have you here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Matt Elliott, my guest today on the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. Look for his book, Overloaded, coming in the month of May, and you'll be hearing more from him, I'm sure, in the months ahead on any number of different platforms. So pleased that he's here with us today. You find us on YouTube, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, also through our partnership with WJR Radio on thevoice.com, thegreatvoice.com. We thank them for that as well. Producer, director, Josh Bowron makes all this happen. You help make it happen by watching and listening as well. Until next time, stay safe, be kind.